I'm here at Combicut Stables, talking to Martin and Belinda Keithley, horse race trainers of some renown and Cheltenham specialist, dare I say. Thank you both for letting me interrupt your busy morning. Go straight to the beginning, please. Can you tell us a little bit about your early lives in racing?
At 16, I came down, while I was still at school. I had a week's work experience with David Nicholson.
From Yorkshire.
Yeah, from Yorkshire. And that went really well. There's a job, he said, there's a job waiting for you as soon as you finish school. So I was down like a shot because I was really keen to try and make it as a jockey. We just learnt so much with David Nicholson, and it was such a good team there. There was likes of Richard Dunwoody, Warren Marsden, David Bridgewater, all top jockeys. So you learnt a lot. You was taught how to do the job properly. It was amazing atmosphere. It was just probably the best years to start off in racing, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and that's where I met my wife Belinda.
And the Duke's a renowned, colourful character. Was he as fearsome as it you read to work for?
He certainly was. You got plenty of bollockings, and most of the time you probably needed one, but he's a great guy. Even after you'd had a bollocking, you'd see him 5 minutes later and he'd be perfectly fine with you. And yes, he was strict, but you...
Probably needed it.
Yeah, and you had to do the job properly, as simple as that. So we learned so much from him.
And for me, I was brought up in the village, so I started riding out for the Duke when I was 10 or 11, and after a year or so, I was riding out every day before school, missed the school bus, and my mum kindly took me to school every day. So I rode out 7 days a week. On Sundays, you got to school with Richard Dunwoody. Obviously, I was just riding the lead horse, but he was brilliant. The Duke was, a second father to me. In fact, one week, I went in on Sunday and said I couldn't ride out that week because my mum's, dear old mum's Morris Minor was going in for its MOT, and he said, no problem, I'll take you to school. And he took me to school all week, and it was, we used to be dropped at the bottom of the drive. It wasn't cool to be driven up to the door, and the Duke insisted on driving me up to the door, which I was embarrassed about, but I think it's probably quite cool now that he drove me to school for a week. But he'd do anything for you. I mean, yeah, he did tell you off and stuff, he probably deserved it, but kept us all on the straight and narrow. I think we all learnt so much. The academy that went through him, and so many people that are still in racing and at the top of their game, from trainers to bloodstock agents to jockeys now, that all started with us at the Duke. It's unbelievable.
I would imagine that people that have heard of his reputation would be thinking, well, go on then, tell us a story. Is there anything you can repeat?
Riding out, this was at Jack Doyle's Castle, actually, and Warren Marsden and a few of the other jockeys just said I need to show more aggression when I'm race riding. And we're walking down the track to go to the gallops, and it was a fourth lot, so quite often the Duke wouldn't come out for one of those later lots. And they said, come on, get your blood up, go on. I was on a very good ride, and what would jump well. Warren said, go on, jump those three edges in a row, show us some aggression. So, to their shock, I turned this horse around and jumped these three hedges, and then went across to the gallops, and we cantered at the gallops, and out popped the Duke, waving his arms, and said, we'll see you lot in the office when we get back in. So, straight in the office, I was expecting the biggest bollocking from the Duke, and actually, Warren Marsden got the biggest bollocking, because the Duke knew I wouldn't have gone ahead and done that on my own accord, and Warren got the bigger bollocking than I did, but yeah, that was still quite a scary moment.
We all ought to write a book, actually. I'm sure there is.
There's lots more I could tell you, but the language would be quite bad and probably take too long to tell you.
Yeah.
We'll save them for part two, maybe. And when you were working there, you rode some of the top horses that the yard had at the time. Was it ever a little bit frustrating that you didn't get to ride them in the big races?
Just a privilege to ride. We probably took it for granted, actually. Just the quality of horses the Duke had was just unbelievable. But I was lucky enough to be the work rider for Viking Flagship, the first lot, which top class 2 mile chaser, and Barton Bank, obviously a Gold Cup horse. So to ride that quality of horses and was just, yeah, a great buzz. And I did get to ride quite a few nice horses for the Duke, a nice horse called Hair Shot, and won a couple on him. I was the first jockey to ride Rel Keel.
Got him beat.
Finished third on him. Somehow, I don't know, I managed to get him beat because he barely lost a race since. But it's just amazing to work with such top quality horses. And
just riding work on them, yeah, it was just... Yeah. And we look back on some of those Cheltenham Festival reruns on the
Racing UK or whatever.
Yeah, and horses that we perhaps didn't think were all that classy, that we took for granted, right, and weren't in the top work groups, they're all there and thereabouts, yeah, turning fame. It was incredible. We think that a lot when we see all the reruns.
Well, another legacy from the Duke, obviously, is that you two met and got married and are now in a training team together. What would have been the biggest lessons you'd learnt from him professionally as a trainer?
Well, before we say that, he actually nearly split us up at one stage. Martin had a spare ride and he couldn't get hold of us because we'd gone out for supper, and he rung my parents back in the day before mobile phones. And when we got home, or I got home to my parents, they said, oh, the Duke's trying to get hold of you. I think Martin's got a spare ride. And I think they weighed you a couple of days later and you were heavy.
No, it's wrong. She's got the story wrong. It was on a horse I'd won two races on, and a horse called Airshot. And then he had two penalties. I rode him at Worcester and he got beat, finished second. And he popped me on the scales afterwards and I was quite heavy. So he totally blamed this horse getting beat and Belinda taking me out for too many suppers.
So then I rang him up that night and he was obviously gutted that he'd got beaten on this horse. And he said, you can't come and visit tonight because the Duke says we've got to finish. And I was like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. So I went in the next morning and I didn't go over. Went in the next morning and rode out. And as I was leaving after second lot, he said, oh, it's normal. All right, darling. And I had never, ever spoke back to him. And I said, no, actually, I'm not all right. You've told Marty he's got to finish with me and I'm not happy about it. And he actually didn't really do confrontation. He barked, but then he just wanted you not to. So he couldn't believe that coming from me. So I remember I've got visions of him going back into the house going, all right, darling, all right. And off he went. We carried on seeing each other then, and that was it. He came to our wedding.
At what point did you decide to leave the saddle, Martin, and become a trainer?
I rode for Dave Nixon for just under 3 years, and he rode a good few winners for him and sat on a few nice horses, but just so competitive there. And where the lights have started off there, there was Richard and Woody, then Adrian Maguire, Warren Marsden, David Bridgewater, then Richard Johnson came along, then Chuck Thornton came along.
And loads of others as well.
Robert Massey, just endless jockeys and all fighting for the same ride. And it was just, so I just thought it was time to just try somewhere else. So I went and joined Knights of St. Davis, rode for him for a couple of years. Again, had success, but I just feel you need to be in the top 10 to make a proper career out of being a jockey. I had some nice winners for Nigel. I won the champion bumper and I was called King's Road. But I was never going to get to that top level, so I just decided to call it a day. I'd enjoyed what I'd done and I was so keen to train horses, and it's just taken off and it's going really well.
But in the meantime, you had a little bit of a spell as a groundsman at Cheltenham Racecourse under Dave Nicholson's son John was head groundsman at that time.
Yeah, so
and Simon Place.
Yeah, Simon's so it was really good experience there. And then, as well as working there, that went to part-time because the point-to-pointers, we started off training point-to-pointers first, and actually we started with one horse we bought from Nigel Twist and Davis called Bosun's Mate. And that was my first win under rules, and actually Belinda rode it at Sandown in a hunter chase. So it all started from one horse.
15 years ago.
Yeah, 15 years ago, and now we're heading towards 50 horses. So it's just, yeah, it's going good.
But Dinah Nicholson once said it, they only started off with one horse, so...
Yeah.
She said, you know, never give up hope, didn't she?
Yeah.
When we first started.
That leads me nicely into, I was going to ask Belinda about your point-to-point career. My little ferreting around tells me you had 12 winners and you even rode a winner at Sandown. Did you enjoy that?
Absolutely loved, yeah. I didn't actually have, I think my strike rate was quite good, just that I rode mainly for Martin, nice horses, didn't ride anything particularly scary, and it was just lovely. I loved it. I had lots of fun. Actually, I rode a few local trainer, Dolly Maud, who's still a good friend. I rode Newton Point, who was at the Dukes as well. He was a good horse for him. I won a few on him as well. Enjoyed it, but Mum was always petrified, and she wasn't very well towards the end of my career, and she wasn't overly keen on me racing. And we'd been married for a little bit, and I kind of thought it's probably time for me to start a family at some stage, and we needed to start making a proper business of it. And although people, you know, I wasn't ever going to be top class lady jockey, so that's kind of why I gave up. And
obviously racing on race courses is the glamour, but how important do you think point-to-point and grassroots racing is to National Hunt Racing?
I think point-to-point is really important, not only for getting the horses, and actually the Irish point-to-points have been the source of so many of our horses that we've got over here now, but the English point-to-pointers now getting much better reputation as well of the youngsters. It used to be the English point-to-points were for the bosun's mate, for example, on his way back down, but now that they're having some really nice horses coming through that are making a lot of money at sales, which can only be good for us. But not only that, for the lads, I think it's just brilliant for lads to go, 16, 17 year old lads, to go and where they're not under the glare of the Racing UK, at the races, ITV, they can go and make their mistakes that they are going to make out in the field and learn from those before they then.
And now they've got the pony racing, which is absolutely fantastic, which obviously Ireland did it a long time before we started, but that really gets these young jockeys going.
They're so lucky, and the support through the pony racing as well, that they have pony racing taster days and all the jockey coaches, and they are so supported. Freddie's starting properly this year because he's nearly 10, and it is fantastic how they do it. I'm very jealous. I wish we could have done pony racing when we were.
I might have been a bit better then.
But yes, the point-to-pointing is a perfect start. We just couldn't. We had to become a bit more commercial. So, you know, you nearly charge as much for training a point-to-pointer. You know, costs are as high. So that's why you got your license out in the end. But we had such fun. It's good grounding, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And do you have people sort of scouting, keeping eyes open at points for potential superstars or purchases?
We have a friend I met at David Nicholson's, Jerry Hogan. He was an amateur there. He's a top bloodstock agent, so he's a good friend as well as being a good agent, and he's found lots of good horses for us. So he's most weekends he'd be point-to-pointing in Ireland, and yeah, just looking for ones to try and buy privately, or looking at ones which we know would be turning up at the Cheltenham sales, and I would trust him with my life, so no.
Yeah, so we're so lucky to have the connection with Jerry, and there's hardly a horse that he sent that we've got through him that hasn't won a race. I mean, we've just, you know, the likes of Champion Court and Creepy and Any Currency and Ben Bain Head and all
Anagotti,
those.
Great
yeah,
and
Gotti, yeah, all through, you know, Jerry and
most of those Cheltenham winners.
Brilliant. So go point in and spot a superstar before anybody else. That's Well, thanks for that. We've done the background there. Can you tell us about the current training operation? When did it all start?
October 2006. It was the first season we started training, and I was called Princeton D. Was my first winner at Taunton. And Belinda wasn't here to celebrate it because she was skiing in St Anton.
She's random. I've not been away for a holiday before. He's painting me badly there. But anyway, the guys that we met in St Anton have since become owners 10 years later, so it was worth going.
So how many horses did you start with when you the first day you started training?
Gosh. It was just those two. It was just Bosun's mate and Prince Dundee, surely.
Must have been.
Maybe a couple of pointers.
And there's Palmer's Peak, and we probably had about eight horses,
we did,
I would say.
Yeah, we did have a few point-to-pointers.
Yeah, so some of the points we were training and then went into real. So it wasn't many, it had been 10 at the most.
And sort of Prince Dundee and Bosun's mate were on the downgrade, and, you know, it was just, was struggling along with a few that we were trying to patch up from other people, and a few Cheap and Cheerfuls, and
then, they were just lucky, and we had some good people set to back us very early on, and we actually haven't missed a year without having a Cheltenham winner, which is just
since our first winner in 2009.
Yeah, yeah. So, from 2009, we haven't missed a year without a Cheltenham winner.
So it was only 3 years till our first Cheltenham winner, and it's just been so kind to us, hasn't it, Cheltenham? Yeah. It's our luckiest track.
So the likes of Champion Court, he really got us on the map, and
Bainhead was our first winner.
Bainhead was my first Cheltenham winner. Warren Marsden rode that, and that was, never forget that day. And I used to ride Bainhead out as well every day, so it was even more special. And the likes of him and the Champion Court, the Creepies, all won graded races at Cheltenham, and just got more people involved in the yard, and it really started to take off.
So fast forward to 2018, how many horses and staff have you got here now?
We would have, about 8 full-timers?
No, we've got 11 full-timers now. I didn't know whether you're going to go horses, because you know how many horses we've got.
Right.
We've got 11 full-timers, and we're actually looking for another couple of members of staff, because we've got 3 or 4 horses that are waiting to come in at the moment. So we're
heading towards 50, aren't we, which is fantastic, and it's a good number. I wouldn't want to get massive and train 100 horses, and I'm not interested in being champion trainer. I just like to build up the quality and go to your big meetings on Saturdays, and obviously focus on the Cheltenham Festival and the other big festivals end of the season.
And even going across to Ireland, our chairman's just been to the Leopardstown Festival, and there's some big prizes to be won in Ireland. There's good fun to be had as well, and some good prize money, and might pick up a race. Got to think about that a bit more as well.
We're going across to France. We took any currency over to France for a big cross-country race, and he was unlucky. He nearly got brought down there, but he still finished a very good third and picked up amazing prize money just for place money. So it's definitely worth thinking about. Going to Ireland and France as well with some of these nice horses.
So it's obviously a career that you both thoroughly enjoy. What would be the best part of being a racehorse trainer?
As you can imagine, it's very up and down sport. When things are going well, it's absolutely amazing.
Giving people winners and magical days, making dreams come true for people is amazing.
You can't describe the feeling, especially Cheltenham winners, you can't describe the feeling to owners who haven't been involved in that. You need to have it, and it's just
even at other meetings. I think it's such an achievement to get a winner anywhere, and just we all love it. The whole team loves it, and I think even at the smaller meetings, winners, perhaps it's sometimes more competitive at the lower grade. Just to get a horse there on the day, the whole team to get it there in top shape, and Martin to have selected the right race, and the jockey to have ridden to orders, or all of it, amazing. That is fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you sort of select the races yourself? Do you put a lot of work in looking at form and stuff like that?
I'm always looking at the programme book. I've got a good lad in the yard who looks through as well, and we have a chat and go through the races together and make a plan. And most options will have a good few options, and then make a few entries and go through the races and try and choose the right one. But it's all about placing the horses as well as possible to get more wins out of them.
Keep yourself in the best company and your horses in the worst company, they say. But Martin,
you've got to be brave sometimes.
Yeah,
and
you have.
You got to throw them in the deep end.
We've definitely had some Cheltenham winners that people
and it can pay off.
Being surprised that we've won.
Like some Champion Court, his first ever hurdle race was in a grade two at Cheltenham, and he won it. And some trainers wouldn't even think about doing that, but sometimes.
Bobble Emerald, Cheltenham 33-1 in October. He might have had better options. Other people would have said other places, but he loved it that day.
You've got to be in it to win it sometimes, and you've got to be brave.
Martin also doesn't mind. Some owners are hands-on and really want to be looking through the form book and the programme book themselves, and you're very happy for them to help race plan and very open to that, aren't you?
If they want to get involved in that, it's fine.
You mentioned Cheltenham, and you have become somewhat a Cheltenham specialist within, 19 races, I think. at the course. What is it that makes you so good around Cheltenham, do you think?
We just seem to have very tough horses, which just seem to handle the track very well.
Not far to travel, maybe? Yeah, it's our local track.
That must help. The horses don't have to travel very far. We've got amazing gallops here that they would be... Well, we're very lucky we've got a mile and a quarter grass gallops with an incline at the... I just don't know if it's a similar incline to Cheltenham. I don't know what it is, but they just... If they don't win there, they seem to also run very well. So it's just a... You need a lot of luck in this spot. We just seem to be very lucky there. And to have
all the support of all the locals.
Yeah, because we get such a following there because we're a local trainer.
Amazing.
That's why it's amazing buzz to have a winner there. But then when you've got other people supporting you as well, then it's...
When we walk in, even on a normal day. Somebody mentioned at the October meeting that it was, you know, a quiet enough day, but the roar when we had a double, actually, the October 2017, and it was just... Fabulous, wasn't it? And they always put extra champagne on when in the Suzanne in the owner's room always knows to get trays of champagne because everyone piles in. It's a Keithley piling. Yeah. And in fact, one day we'd had a double and dear old Ben Bainhead had bounced back 8 years after his initial win.
First win, yeah. Which was amazing. It was a graded race.
And he won on the same day as Annie Currency. We had a double that day in December. And we were singing "There's Only One Martin Keithley" really loudly, and Martin was a little bit embarrassed when he walked in. And Paul Carberry came in the jockey's room door, is at the back of the winner's room. They were just like, what was happening? They popped their heads around to see what the riot was in the winner's room. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Talking to jockeys, I do believe there's a special relationship you've got with Richard Johnson. Does that stem from your early days?
Well, he came to the Dukes as a kid in his school holidays, and the Duke rung me up one day and said, I've got a good lad coming from a good Herefordshire family. And he was staying with a girl, a couple just outside the village that were great friends of ours. And he said he wondered if I could go and pick him up every day and bring him into the yard every morning during half term once. And so that was probably when he was... 14, 15, he was a great mate of yours, all the lads in the yard were friendly.
Yeah, so we've known him for years and it's great we can still team up and have winners and no, it's just great. After AP finally retired, it just deserves to be champion jockey and what would be his third one coming up and no, he really deserves
that. Such an ambassador for the sport. Yeah. I mean, he's ridden a winner for our racing club and he gives... each and every one of those the time they have selfies and it's like he's got all the time in the world. He's in under no and he just talks to them all like it's their individual horse. He's just, there's no side to him, no airs and graces. He's great with our kids. He is just a super guy and he's fantastic.
So that motivation and the rides he gives horses is just, yeah, it's just brilliant.
Never see him in a bad mood, do you? And he just, yeah, he's just a top ambassador for our sport, I think.
We talked about the highs and the lows of horse racing. There, in your particular case, Annie Currency winning the cross-country race at the festival would have been a massive high, and then a massive low when you so cruelly got it taken away from you from what was really a technicality. How do you bounce back from a massive disappointment like that?
Yeah, that was very tough, because obviously that's my biggest ambition and dream to have a Cheltenham Festival winner, and for Annie Currency to go so close a good few times, and the year before he got beat a short head, and to finally do it was just absolutely amazing. And then I had the most horrendous phone call from the BHA, and it was as Annie Currency was going around the parade ring for the April meeting after the festival. He was in the paddock and they said, got some bad news for you, it's failed the dope test, do you want to run him today? And I said, well, my jockey's just come in the paddock, I need to speak to him. I said, can't understand what you're telling me because we've done nothing wrong and we've got nothing to hide. And I said, the horse is going to run. And Julie went and won.
Over the regulation fences as well that day.
Yeah, so that was strange. So I was in a state of shock watching him win again. And yeah, it's just very hard to take. And
we had another double that day as well, didn't we? But we couldn't tell anyone
that day as well. So.
We just had to go through the motions
that day. Put a brave face on and it was tough, but the Kurt take the day away from us, and
the support we've had though, was amazing.
How do you think that horse racing is as a sport at the moment? Is it a healthy position, and but can it do anything to improve its game?
The healthy side, I think, really pleased. There seems to be a lot more money coming into the prize money now, and the prize money is going further down to the place horses and down to six and eights in some races. So for the low grade races, at least the owners are getting something back, even if you're not winning. And there's been a big difference in prize money, which needed to be. Downside again about the sport, I do get frustrated. I know that I have a difficult job, the handicappers, but I do feel that we're trying to get owners involved in racing, and it's like you can win your races and then you don't win for a good few years after that. I just don't think that's a good side of the sport.
There's a few things that
if
they fall at the last and they're going to win, they haven't won. The owner hasn't won prize money. It hasn't paid for the day. So why penalise it by going up in the handicap as well?
Let it come out next time and give it a chance to win.
It might have lost its confidence in that fall. It might not win next time. So then being penalised by that's a huge bugbear.
I don't think that should be allowed. It's just totally wrong.
But owners, they're starting to recognise that we really need owners, so they must be looked after much better at racecourses. We've also realised that we need to look after them even better, so we've got this lovely owners room, and there's so much more. We've got a visitors car park so that they're not parked right down the end at the bottom of where all the lads and girls are parked. They've got their own car park. It's things like that that racing are thinking through, and giving free lunches and they should embrace that. And the staff as well, they're giving the lads at the races free food for the canteen. And some races courses are doing it better than others, but we couldn't do it without the lads and girls that lead up. So they're an important, but I know they're addressing all of this, and some of it takes money, and they're simplifying how partnerships are run through Weatherbys, and quite a lot of that's being simplified because it is a minefield. It's so frightening, and I'm sure it puts off some potential owners when they ring up and try and register. There's just so much to think about when you're starting as a sole owner or a partnership. So I think they are addressing. I know there's a long way to go with quite a lot of it, but they're definitely doing well on addressing some of these issues.
Do you think syndicates should be more encouraged?
Yeah, I think it's a great way. And I mean, we found from our racing club, in fact, that you can come in at £500 a year and have lots of fun, and then people feel more involved, they get to know us, and they might have lots of disposable income and think, actually, I want to be more involved, I want to have a leg in one or a sixth in one. And so we've had the step ladder model that we're using now. We have had people join our racing club, be a bit braver, and come and join a syndicate or a partnership, and have loved that. And some have gone on and bought one on their own. But I think they're super because you meet like-minded people, and it makes it more affordable as well. You can have a few different horses in a few different syndicates rather than just all your eggs in one basket. So I definitely think it's the way forward.
The frustrating part of the sport can be, I know the handicappers have a difficult job, but I just feel like we're fighting a losing battle sometimes. They're very quick to go up, and then for an example, I've got a horse called Solstice Star. He was rated 94. He won 5 races, and he went up to nearly 140. Well, he hasn't won for 2 years now, and he's still higher than his last winning mark 2 years ago. And I just think they need to give, when a horse isn't, when the handicap has finally got to you, they need to give you a bigger chance and drop you down quicker, because this horse has gone 2 years without winning and he's still higher than his last winning mark. And I think that's not right, that's unfair. And
owners can't afford to keep paying those bills and not getting any return on them.
If I said to an owner, would you like to buy this horse? You win the first season, but then you won't win for another 2 years. Well, that's not going to encourage people into the sport, is it? It can get frustrating at times. And like we said, there's one rule, it shouldn't be allowed, and when a horse falls at the last when it's winning, I just think it's horrendous. They can put a horse up for falling. The owners come away with nothing on the day. At least let the horse come out and try and win again without trying to stop it from winning next time. But yeah, it's, I know they've got a tough job, but it's frustrating at times. And if you, these small fields, if you run close to a highly rated horse with a novice, you're petrified you're going to get a ridiculous mark, you're never going to win off it. It's tough.
So everyone moans that there are smaller fields, but that's the reason who's why. Brave enough to run them and take the risk of a horse running an okay race and get going up? Yeah.
Okay, on the final question, on a more, well, hopefully people listen to that and there'll be some changes, but what if you could see yourselves in 5 years' time, ideally, where would you be? As a business,
we're really keen to keep building on the numbers. Saying that, we don't want to get too big, but if we could average between 50 and 60 horses, I think that's a really good number
in training.
And just keep building the quality up, and we just want good quality horses. We can be competitive at the big meetings on Saturdays, and obviously. Big aim is to build a bigger string up for the Cheltenham Festival and the other festivals, Aintree and even Punchestown. But if we can keep but get building forward and on quality and that's our main objective.
And I'd quite like to keep building the quality of the team here, the human team as well, because we're so lucky to have a fantastic team. And we've the Lycett's and the National Trainers Federation have brought in a team champion award that we've embraced, and it's going to be an ongoing thing to help retain staff and help give them a stepladder to the future, because all of the team aren't going to stay here forever. They are going to move around, but it's to improve the quality of the staff in racing and retain the staff in racing. And so we have instructors, we're going to continue to have instructors coming in from outside, the likes of Yogi Breisner and Richard Perrin from the British Racing School has been up and trained them, because the better the riding ability of our team, the better the horses are going to go and the better they're going to perform on the track. And the happier the team here, I'm sure happy people make happy horses. So if we continue to have our fantastic team building and team meetings and just look after our team here, I just think it for the future of the business, it can only be a fantastic thing.
Yeah, now we're a limited company, and our chairman, John Hughes, who's been involved in racing for a long time, is just, his knowledge through the business side is just absolutely amazing. And he's got a lot of owners involved in the yard, he has plenty of horses himself, and it's just working really well. And yeah, we couldn't do it without people like that backing us.
And we've got some of our key owners have formed an owners forum to help look at the things that we can be doing better. And so they meet regularly and they're helping push us forward. And it's the business knowledge that we haven't had from just starting in grassroots racing, but we haven't had the business side and the business experience behind us. So it's embracing all the owners and what they can bring to the table. And they seem to be happy to bring that and share their,
they're amazing.
Share, all their expertise, whatever it be it fantastic owner, put the Brillare Mementos in and his new kitchen in, and just things like, so we're just taking all the help we can get. We're embracing it all. And with everybody's help, it is a wider team, not just our team that work for us full time, our owners and everything. And it is an actual massive team effort.
And then we're lucky, we've got a very good yard sponsor, Ross Hemmings, and he does gallop surfaces and arenas. Leisure Ride Group, they're called. And they've just put our amazing gallops in. We've got a circular loop we put in the summer. It's about 7 metres wide, so they canter around the inside. Then we've got jumps on the outside, so we can always school if the grass is frozen or too wet. It's been a massive asset to the yard. And we've got a mile all-weather gallop across where the grass gallops are, which is the same surface, a carpet fibre gallop, and it's an amazing surface and obviously very well maintained, and we get them re-waxed when they need to do and topped up, and So it's a very good sponsor to have in the yard, and the best surfaces for the horses as well. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
You can follow Star Sports on Twitter at @StarSports_bet, our Facebook page at @StarSportsBet, and also view all our latest videos on YouTube at Star Sports. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.